Spectacular episode 122, EGM interview for the week of July 30th, 2007.
All right, gentlemen, let's get freaky!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm Fumo Jive.
I'm JVP.
Hey, this is Dan Chu.
All right. The Dan Chu from EGM.
Welcome, Mr. Chu.
Yeah, man. I want to thank you very much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks definitely for inviting me on.
Yeah, I mean, it took a little while, but I mean, E3 was, I'm sure it was very hectic on you, so.
Yeah,
I expected that. Yeah, so, yeah, now that we have you on, I mean, I'm going to ask you a few questions here. We have some submissions from people from the Podtacular community. But before we go there, why don't you tell us the obvious? How long have you been with EGM, and how was it that you got the job?
Oh, man, I've been at EGM now total of, 11 years now. I started in April of 96. And I did take a year off in April 2000. I left for the dot-com boom. I tried to stay at gamers.com for about a year. And that was like, you know, we're in the middle of that kind of internet gold rush, and, but the money wasn't managed right, and we all got laid off a year later. Luckily, like, so this was April 2001, EGM was looking for an editor-in-chief at that time, so I applied for that job. You know, obviously I had a little bit of an advantage having worked there before. And, so for me, I was super, super fortunate that right when, I got laid off from one job that EGM was looking to hire somebody for a position that was suited for me, so, they hired me back.
Oh, wow, cool. And, I mean, you know, we obviously have a large demographic of listeners who are, teenagers. And a lot of them are very interested in journalism and, you know, writing for websites and everything. So, I mean, what were the main requirements for the job? Like, I mean, obviously you must have had some educational background in journalism.
I went to a few classes, went to school here and there. Yeah, definitely school's important. You know, like, I actually didn't have a proper journalism background training.
Okay.
I went to college for statistics. I went to the University of Michigan. And but I really didn't like it. So it's kind of odd that my career took me this way, but I knew I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to have anything to do with what I was learning in school.
Oh, okay.
And again,
I can agree
with
that.
Lucky. Yeah, so I was just lucky that I turned in my resume to EGM and they liked my cover letter. They thought that there was something there in terms of my writing, so wanted to see more writing samples, and then they brought me in for an interview and hired me. So that was pretty cool, but I think the thing for people to know, I mean, now if I could go back knowing what career I would have taken, I would have studied journalism. That would have been really good. Or English is good, you know. And I tell people sometimes if you have extra time and you have the energy and the will, Japanese isn't a bad language to learn because, you know, if all things being equal, Liz and I are the same kind of writer, same level of ability, we meet the lines, have the same personality, but if you know Japanese and I don't, you have a little leg up over me when it comes to, say, interviewing a developer or going to Japan to Tokyo Game Show to cover some games over in Japan. So that can be helpful, but by far the most important thing is really just a passion for games and the ability to write.
So what is it, 3 out of 5 people that go to take statistics in school don't end up going into statistics as a job?
So, I mean, you were mentioning your cover letter, and, you know, it's very important for any job to have a very good cover letter, and, I mean,
that's more important than your resume.
Exactly. I mean, it kind of tells you who the individual is, not just a piece of paper with job descriptions. And that's something I'm actually finally, after 35 years, you know, figuring out myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it would depend on the job, obviously. You know, like if you're going in for refrigeration repair, maybe they want to know what kind of experience you have more than you know, whatever you're going to say in your cover letter. But I think for a writing job, for me, I definitely, you know, I don't care. I've met lots of people who have years of newspaper experience, and they're they've like, I did a high school paper, and I worked for such and such newspaper in town, and I've done this writing and this writing, and I have a journalism background. I have a bachelor of arts in journalism from University of Iowa. Like, I've met all these people, and then but then their writing kind of sucks, and I'm like, well, I don't care what kind of experience you have. I want to know what kind of writing you have. So for us, like, the kind of work we do, your writing samples are infinitely more important than what you have on paper in your portfolio, or, you know, what you have on your resume.
Okay. So like, if I wrote down in my cover letter that every refrigerator I built, the ice cubes are shaped like Master Chief, that wouldn't like really count.
No, well, see, here's the thing. That would actually, if you had a reason for saying what you just said, other than you're crazy, like, it might catch my attention. It might be like, what's this guy, you know, getting to? Like, what's he trying to get to? And that's the thing. I think, like, it depends for whom you're writing, right? You have to pay attention. Like, if you're going to write for, say, CNN.com or GameSpot or 1UP or IGN or EGM, whatever, you really have to know the format. You know, like, if you're going to send me a writing sample, and then you send me a 2,000-word feature, a review, written very straightforwardly, really dry and professional.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, you're obviously, I'm going to look at it and say, it might be well written, but you obviously don't read EGM and you're not paying attention, because we don't do 2,000-word reviews. Second of all, we're a little bit more conversational, a little bit more irreverent, you know, a little more energy in our writing than a straightforward news piece. Or if you're going to go write for GameSpot, which is a little bit more of a straightforward news kind of site, and you just make this real comedy filled article, that it might not be appropriate for them. So I think that the important thing is to, you know, gear your writing samples toward the people you're applying with. So so it makes sense for those guys.
Cool. Nice.
So with
nice.
your little Master Chief, you know, refrigeration thing, that could be an interesting hook. That might be like a really interesting lead to a cover letter, and that might actually catch my attention. And I'm like, I got to read what this guy has to say.
So I'll make sure I send you a cover letter to them. Sweet,
yeah,
sweet.
That's some cool insight in the industry, man. Thanks, appreciate that.
No, of course. Oh, that's definitely going to... a lot of our listeners are definitely going to... hopefully, they'll listen to your advice.
Yeah,
well, can I... I actually wrote a big thing about it. Do you mind if I on this URL?
Oh, sure. Is it the one you did in WhatUp?
Yeah. It's on my blog, EGMshoe, S-H-O-E. .oneup.com, and in my greeting to my blog, there's a link to, I wrote a 3,000-word article about this that, like, a ton of people have found helpful. Like, you know, if you're just getting started, what some tips about how to get started, what I just said a moment ago about making sure you write for the outlet that you're applying at. How to get freelance work, what are some of the barriers to having freelance work, and stuff like that. So a lot of people found it useful, because I had to write it, because it's like every day I get that question, and I'm like, man, I should just write one thing that I can refer people to all the time.
Yeah, it was a good read. I read it actually like maybe 3 months ago, and then
cool.
The idea came, wait a minute, why don't I ask Dan to come on the show? Yes. So,
well,
cool.
Speaking
so
of our,
we'll.
Listeners earlier, I was just going to say, you know, we got plenty of questions from our listeners for Dan. Why don't we start off with the first one here?
The Hawk.
The Hawk 442.
The Hawk.
He writes in saying, "I'd like to ask what exactly you do as editor in chief of EGM. What are your responsibilities and jobs to do before each issue is released? And also, how many people does it take to put together a single issue? Is there ever a struggle to finish the pieces before a deadline is reached?"
Oh, that's a good question. I'm pretty much just the pretty face they hire to put in the front of the magazine, and I let all these other guys do all the heavy work and the heavy lifting. my job, basically, like, I have to be the big picture guy and kind of give this direction for the magazine, right? Like, we don't just have a bunch of writers writing about whatever. I have to kind of dictate, okay, what is the tone of the magazine? What are our standards? What exclusives are we chasing? How many pages should we be dedicating to this or that? So, but really, like, you know, it's the guys here who do the hard work. Like, my job's, I don't want to take credit for a lot of the, if there's an article that you really like, I write some myself, but it's my team that really does all the work. You know, I have, like, so we have three art people, one art director and an assistant art director and an intern who does all the layout. They color correct the screenshots. They put everything together and design the magazine. Then we have six editors and another editorial intern. And then, of course, we have freelancers. We have our 1UP team, 1UP.com team that helps us out as well. And all these guys are the ones that write the articles. They put the, or they freelance out the articles and edit them and put them in the magazine. I just kind of help oversee and make sure like all our ships are sailing in the right same direction, you know. So it's like I'm the one that's who's responsible for making sure the magazine does well, it sells, that we're doing a consistent voice. And probably the busiest work I have to do is at the end of a deadline, I have to read every page, you know. Like, so we it's really hard. Like, that's why I have to train my editors to look for, like, okay, this is how our audience and this is how we talk to them. And so they get the idea, so they edit up the articles, and then when it comes to me, I do the final sign off, and I'll make hopefully at that point a few corrections and just say, you know, just for a final pass sign off, and then the pages go to the printer from there.
Nice. Yeah, you have actually a deadline coming up, right? You were telling me?
Yeah, next week, at the end of next week, we should be done with the issue, so we're kind of getting into that crunch mode where everything has to come together. Like I said, signing off on the pages, and the Hawk was asking, like, do we have to struggle to finish pieces before deadline is reached? And that's magazine life. Every month is like that. There's something where, you know, you'd love to have another week to work on an article and take your time, but, you know, the real world doesn't work that way.
Yeah,
you got to get your stuff done. So, well, so luckily we have a great managing editor, Jennifer Sal, that she kind of coordinates traffic and makes sure that, you know, like, writers and kind of right brain creative types are, you know, they're not good about deadlines to begin with. You know, they're not necessarily the most organized of people. They just have these ideas and they want to do things, and it's her job to kind of make sure, like, okay, well, did you start this yet? Did you assign an illustration out yet? Did you get the photography done? Is the writing? Have you started the writing? Did you get the discs in? And, you know, she kind of helps all keep everyone on track so that we do meet our deadlines.
Cool. So she cracks the whip, pretty much.
Yeah.
Deadline.
Exactly.
Well, sweet. So, Big Gully Dan, he sent in a submission about some of the Halo leaks, Halo 3 leaks. Well, not actually leaks. They were leaked. It was a leaked article from your EGM issue coming up in September. He wants to know, how the heck did the images from the September issue get on the internet so quickly? Did someone get an advanced copy, or were those images taken from an employee? If it was an employee, do you have ways of finding out who leaked it?
So what happened was these kind of blurry images, these kind of camera pics of these pages showed up on the internet, and it really sucked for us. But what happened was, someone at the printer, before the book was even bound, took the printing sheets of the colored pages and then stole a bunch of them, took them home, took pictures, sent them to his friend, and his friend started putting them up on his photo bucket and on the internet. And then we're just like, this is way before the issue. This is like 10 days before the issue is scheduled to hit anybody. The book is still in the middle of printing. And so what sucks for us is, first of all, like, it put us in big trouble with Microsoft, you know, because we tell them when the issue is coming out, and they plan the embargoes around that, and they coordinate with all the other territories in Europe about, okay, this is when you're covering it, and this is when you're going to see the game, but information cannot spill before this point. Because the reason they do that is to protect us, so that online doesn't spoil all the hard work that we do.
Of course.
But then it's, you know, these two guys kind of wrecked that for us, and it really, you know, it kind of messed us up with Microsoft. But also at the same time, it's kind of like, man, you know, as I put so much, or we, you know, as a company, as a staff here, we put so much work into each issue and each story, and we're really proud of the layout, we're proud of the text and all the research that we did, and the fact checking, and all this stuff, and we're really happy to put something together and to have people read it first, like in these blurry, illegal pictures without getting the magazine. It's kind of like, that kind of ruins it for us, you know. It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
If you spend a lot of time making a great movie and people are downloading it illegally, it's does it have to be like that? And another thing is it just hurts our business, you know, like we depend on selling the issue, and if people are always going online to like read the scans for free or photos for free, and then they don't buy the issue, that's like money out of our pockets.
Absolutely,
so,
absolutely.
And so that really sucks for us too. Like, and the thing is, the guy who leaked the photos, you know, I don't think he did it with any real like sense of malice of like where he was out to do evil or to hurt our business. You know, I'm pretty sure he was just an excited fan of the game, and he was just wanting to get this information out. But I don't know if he realized how much damage he did, because the minute one scans out, it spreads like crazy over the
internet. Of course, especially with a game like Halo 3, that everyone's just scrounging to get any little bit of information about. And here you have, you know, these weapons and vehicles that haven't been talked about at all. And, of course, you guys have the exclusive. And, you know, for it to be spoiled that way, you know, it's pretty harsh.
Yeah, it really bums us out. And we're like, everyone here is kind of like, oh, man, I can't believe this is happening. But, you know, we have to deal with it. Like, the printer actually sent an ex-FBI agent investigator.
Out.
They figured out who the kid was, talked to him, found out who his friend was at the printer, fired him, and then they told these guys to destroy all the evidence and all this stuff. And, you know, the kid who put up the pictures did contact us to apologize, which was cool of him. You know, like I said, I don't think he was trying to do things maliciously, but by then it was way too late and damage is done, and we just have to move on.
Yep, and that's a lesson, you know.
Yeah,
everything has a consequence, so
I was gonna say, man,
do things right, you know.
I'm definitely excited for this article to come out, because I'm a subscriber to EGM as well, and you know, I'm looking forward to reading like the full version, because there was plenty of it I could just not figure out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to
the real version
that you guys intended to be read in the first place.
Yeah, I
really appreciate that, because there is, you know, like, our story is not just a list of bullet points. You know, it's not like, okay, here, new weapon, and here's what we know about it. You knew this, knew this. Like, we write a story, you know, about, like, our visit to Bungie and how they described the levels to us and what we saw and what our experiences were like in these new features and things like that. So we, you know, it wasn't like we just, like, okay, here's what we saw and just typed it out literally, like, bullet point by bullet point, you know. So we do put some energy into it, and we do appreciate that. And the other thing about that, too, is, like, we want people to read the issue, not only from a business end, but just to get the facts right, because then we did make one mistake. We wrote about it in one up. There was one one thing we're going to clarify when the issue's out, but there's, like, one popular misconception out there that, you know, it's like playing a game of telephone where someone read part of what they understood to be online co-op in Halo, and the original story, the real story, says that right now, at the time when we saw the game, it was not implemented yet, but Bungie is working on it and they want to make it happen.
Okay.
But then, through the process of internet reporting and, you know, like websites not checking the facts or checking the source and just reporting off of what other websites say and so on and so forth, eventually there's this big massive movement, thing out there that just says, oh, no online co-op in Halo 3, and everyone's pissed off, and everyone's like mad at Bungie and Microsoft. And we're like, we didn't say that, because this is the internet, you know, taking something and just passing it along without checking their facts. So that's another thing. It's like, you know, if you read the actual issue, you'll get, you know, what we report direct from Bungie.
You know what was cool about that, though, for you guys, is that that was like the big story. Like, everyone assumed that that's all the article said. So they just, that's all they reported. So a lot of people didn't report on anything else that was in that article. And there was some bombshell stuff in that article that you guys got to check out when the time comes.
Yeah. And to finish off what Dan said, obviously he asked a question that I don't think Dan can really talk about. But He says, keep up the good work at EGM, and he cannot wait for the September issue. So thanks a lot, Big Goalie Dan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much, Scott. We really appreciate that.
Beasting had a question asking how you got started in gaming. We've already talked about how you got started at EGM, but in gaming in general.
Man, ever since I was little, like it's funny because a lot of my college friends who, like, I used to read EGM in college, and like long before I ever knew or even thought about working in the industry, and I used to be a big gamer. You know, like when I was little, subscribed to Nintendo Power, EGM for the longest time.
Yeah, what was your favorite game back then?
Oh my God, you gotta tell me what era, because
okay,
because I had my first system.
Your favorite Super
Television.
Oh, okay. Your favorite Super NES game.
That's one of my favorite all-time systems. My all-time favorite game period is Super Mario Brothers 3.
Okay.
So, so if you kind of say, I guess Super Mario All-Stars was a fantastic cartridge. I love Final Fantasy 2 and 3 on that system.
Oh,
probably one of the more unknown games, Metal Marines. I used to love that on
Metal Marines.
Super Nintendo. Love that game. Super Metroid, Zelda, I just love that system.
Yeah, so many good games.
I figured you would have some kind of a long history with that one.
Yeah, Super Nintendo definitely, NES as well. But like how I got started, even when I was little, I just loved, like, my cousins had an Atari 2600, and I wanted to see them. Like, I didn't give a crap about that side of the family. This was like a step side of the family. I just, you know, I didn't know them that well. I didn't know. Because my dad married into this family, but I'm like, all I knew is they have an Atari 2600, and I gotta hang out with these guys. So these are like my step cousins, and then like when I go there, that's all I would want to do is play the Atari 2600. So that was one of my earlier experiences. I had little kind of Game and Watch style LED toys that you buy in Chinatown, like these kind of rip-off games from who knows where, you know.
I know.
Those things. Intellivision 2, the first system I owned, and I love that. I'd save up money to buy a game, and you know, these are the days where it's like, I remember paying $35 for River Raid, and I'm like, you know, like it's different when you're buying games when you're young, I think, because you love, like, River Raid really wasn't that great of a game, but I kind of made myself like it because I spent $35 on it, and that's all I was going to play.
I know how that feels, man.
I do that now.
Yeah. I
will like
Game Boy game.
No matter what.
I bought this Game Boy game called Boomer's Adventure in Asmic World, and it was like $15, but it cost me so much in young person money, so like, or like young teenager person. Money, whatever. Young person money.
Adolescent cash.
Yeah, I'd like to buy this in young person money, please. yeah, but like, it was like the stupidest game ever. It was completely pointless. But for some, I forced myself to play that game just because I spent that much money on it. And
I bet you ain't forgetting that game, though.
Yeah, I know, man. Yeah, I still remember that. I mean, it was just retarded. It was made by Asmic, and it was Boomer's Adventure in Asmic World.
Nice.
And these are the days, like when I was a kid, like they could sell me on a game just based on the packaging with like artwork that has nothing to, like, really, it's not representative of what the game really is like at all. Mm-hmm. I used to have like amazing box art, and you're like,
it's
badass. And I'm like, you bought the game, and then it's, when you get it home, it's nothing like what the box shows it to be.
It's freaking like,
as a matter of fact, in the early days of gaming magazines, I used to see like the PS, you know, the PSX, PS1. It would have images of these games that are coming up. And I'm like, oh my God, this game looks unbelievable. And it was like a picture of a cutscene or just, art, you know. I'm like, this doesn't look like the same game I wanted. Especially PC games, because PCs, you know, they always had like cutscenes and stuff.
Right.
So yeah, I used to be fooled. That was back in the days when it was simple and it was all about the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're gonna go to another one here. And I have to apologize ahead of time to some of the submitters, because there are some questions that are kind of like repeats. But here is one from Lucas Toast. He's actually one of the new members. He goes, hi, my question is, you seem to know a lot about Halo and its birth. What would you say is your most memorable moment in playing the multiplayer?
I'm definitely not an expert at Halo. I just I really enjoy the series, especially multiplayer. But some of the most exciting moments, I remember when we first got Halo, like back before the Xbox One came out, they showed mm-hmm. Halo at E3 that same year.
Yeah.
And that was supposed to be the big game. You heard a lot of buzz about it. And we saw it. It didn't look that great. And we remember leaving E3 thinking, you know what, like, nothing that special about that game so far. It didn't look that fantastic.
Yeah.
So didn't give it much thought. But then the Xbox One was about to launch, and we were working on a big Xbox versus GameCube story, and we were working with Nintendo to see, like, you know, give us, we need to see Luigi's Mansion, we need to see Rogue Squadron, and then on the Xbox side, we need to see Dead or Alive, and Munch's Odyssey, and Halo.
Mm-hmm.
And so and it was really weird because that was a time before, like, the companies, when they release a new machine, sometimes they don't know how to get debug machines to the press, which are our versions of these consoles that play pre-release software. And reason we have this is because, I don't know if all your listeners know this, but we have these debug machines because when the companies burn the discs, they want it playable on special machines to prevent piracy.
Yes.
They don't want these discs that can play on any machine. So,
mm-hmm.
so we have special machines for that, and they, before we got these special machines, they're like, well, we haven't created these yet, so we have to come out and demo these games for you. And then, interesting quick side story was, this was during 9/11 happened right at that time. And then, so they had a lot of trouble carrying out these big suitcases with these strange devices that no one's seen before. Like, no one knows what's an Xbox at this point.
I know.
No one knows what's a GameCube. And then everyone was paranoid as all hell. So it was like a pain in the ass, and we're just like, oh crap, deadline's coming up, we gotta do the story. But by some miracle, it all worked out. They flew out to see us and for us to play the games and vote on them and rate them, like just based on early playing time, not a full review. And then when we played Halo, we're like, whoa, this is looking a lot better than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, they finally got those machines to us, and then they sent us 4 copies of Halo 1, and I still have this in my desk, and then the Xboxes to play them on. And then we were playing System Link for the first time. And then now you gotta imagine it as a console gamer, you know, mm-hmm. multiplayer first-person shooters online, no big deal on the PC side, but on the console side,
absolutely.
You know, we were playing 4-player split-screen GoldenEye back in these days, you know,
oh, yeah.
which was so awesome. But then when you were playing Halo, 16 players on these huge maps and capture the flag and all this stuff, we were like, wow, this is awesome. So we had to figure out at that point who were the 3 reviewers, and those guys were just steady playing the game constantly in a campaign mode. And then the rest of us, like, I wasn't one of the reviewers, we just get the itch. And then, so in the middle of the workday, we just announced, all right, let's, you know what, I think the reviewers need some help with the multiplayer. They need to play more multiplayer. So then we'd all stop working for like 2 hours, set up our hub, set up System Link, and then play like 10-player, 8-player, or 16-player, and we'd recruit other people in the office, like from the official PlayStation magazine and our other magazines. And everyone just gather around and play, and then like 2 hours later, we're like, I gotta get back to work. Yeah, so those are like great memories because it was all so fresh and new to us, and it was definitely exciting. So that was one, but I'd say probably more, and I know this is an answer that's like a half hour way too long, but
the
first time we beat Bungie, and the second time we beat Bungie in the Hump Day Challenge was just a thrill. Like, the first time we played with some people in our clan who were readers that we knew, and then we had this clan already, and then we went in and just wasted Bungie 4 games to nothing. And then Bungie, Frank O'Connor, who's at the time, I believe he was a community manager, was complaining that, hey, they're not all real EGMers, you know. And we're like, okay, we'll give you that. They weren't ringers, they were on our plan already, but we were like, okay, yeah, that's true. They're just some of our friends and some like people from our community and people from our website. So we're like, okay, we'll just do the EGMers. And then we beat them again 2-1, and I was just like, was so excited. I was just like thrilled because I couldn't believe it was like we were the underdogs. You know, these are the guys who made the game.
I know.
And was playing and testing it, and to be able to beat him was just awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I mean, this is my question to you about Halo, the original Halo. Actually, it's kind of comparing Halo and Halo 3, because one is the beginning, the other one's the end of a story arc. Now, you said that with the original Halo, it was something new, something fresh that you guys never experienced on a console. Do you feel that same sense of excitement for what you have seen in Halo 3 so far?
No, it's a different excitement because it's, you know, we've already established the universe, the Covenant, the Marines, you know, like, and all the vehicles in the world and the mm-hmm. fiction that's already established. So that kind of sense of, you know, like, I remember playing Halo 1 in a campaign mode, just like getting on, like the first time you're on the Halo itself and you're in this kind of alien but still familiar looking world, like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I didn't even mind all the repetitive bits that people complain about. Like, I realize they're repetitive, and the second time I played through the game, I'm like, man, this is really repetitive. But the first time, I was just, like, loving just exploring the game, period. So this is a little different because, you know, Halo 2 has some moments on Earth. Halo 3 has, you know, the single-player levels we played so far on Earth. And it's a different kind of excitement because now it's, like, better graphics. And then the stuff like a lot, like new multiplayer maps, which I'm definitely excited about because that's my favorite thing about Halo is multiplayer. The way you customize a game, there's this thing that we're going to talk about in our article with a map editor that where it doesn't sound like it should be that exciting, but there's a lot to it. It's really actually a lot of fun because you can play the game while you're editing a map.
And wow.
When you do that, it leads to a lot of different scenarios and a lot of kind of game within a game things that you can do. So I have like, I'm more excited now about the features in Halo 3, and sort of seeing the conclusion of the story rather than that sense of discovery and wonderment of exploring this alien fiction for the first time, or the sci-fi fiction.
Yeah, sweet, sweet.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
Very cool. Definitely. Well, you know, that's cool to know that you're a Halo fan as well, because, you know, I mean, having experienced all these other games, you know, it's cool that Halo sticks out to you just like it does to us. That's cool.
Absolutely. I mean, I could imagine the amount of games you must play, you know, different varieties and genres.
Right. Well, it's funny that you guys say that because it's really weird. Like, recently, I was complaining, like, someone on our message boards, they were making a joke about how, I forgot what the joke was exactly, but it's something about if it wasn't Halo that I wouldn't care, you know. And then, so we were talking about this on our podcast last week where, we're like, well, I'm kind of in this weird spot because people want me to be opinionated. They want to know I like games. They don't want me to be this jaded old, you know, like I view every game like with this kind of cold heart where I don't have any passion for the hobby. You know, it's just like,
yeah,
whatever. It's like playing a game is like, I don't know, like looking at a pencil or something. I don't know, something boring, you know. Like people want, they obviously want us to be passionate about games and love games, but at the same time, when I'm like, I'm a Splinter Cell fan, I'm a Halo fan, I'm a Tetris Attack fan, Soul Calibur fan, then people all of a sudden, it's like the internet and the message boards are always looking at the most negative way they can look at something. Then it's all of a sudden, it's like, oh, he's biased, and then he's getting paid off by Microsoft, or, you know, mm-hmm. they're paying him to, like, or something like that. I'm like, man, it's weird in this day of message boards and stuff.
You can't win. And that was something I really was interested in, how, you know, someone in your status who has, you know, combined with the magazine, you know, thousands of fans. And of course, with fans, there are people that just love to critique every little thing you guys do. So how do you go about handling like that?
Oh, it's tough because I know, you know, like, you should say, like, well, come on, you're running a magazine, you're going to have a tough skin. And that's true, you know, but I'm still human, you know. I still, like, you know, I don't think I'm some god or, you know, some awesome greatest editor in the world or anything like that. I'm just, like, when people criticize you or critique you, you take it to heart because you want to get better. You want to make the magazine better because you're making it for the readers. You know, if they're unhappy with something, you want to make it happy for them. But the problem is you can't make everyone happy, you know?
No.
Like, nope. If I decide, okay, I'm not going to be a Halo fan, I'm going to be very neutral on Halo, then people are like, oh, man, you know, EGM sucks. They have no passion for these games. Like, how do they not like games, you know? Yeah. So, like I said, it's a lot of times it seems like a lose-lose situation. So you just kind of have to back off a bit and say, well, okay, well, you know, instead of letting one guy on a message board get to you, kind of look at it like, well, you know, you have 4.5 million readers, you must be doing something right. You know, you're selling issues, people talk about you, they like the magazine, they're subscribing to it, so you're doing something right. So that you kind of have to remind yourself of it sometimes, and it's good to get like positive feedback from the people who do want to give positive feedback, because then you're reminded that, oh yeah, not everyone's a jerk out there. Like, people like the magazine.
yeah, absolutely, man.
Definitely.
So yeah, we got some more submitters over here.
We got one from KaiFX here who says, hey, I just wanted to say I love your magazine and I'm so glad I'm subscribed to it. I got some Halo-related questions for you. First of all, during your time playing Halo 3 with the beta and onwards, how do you think Halo 3 has changed since the first time you've seen it?
Well, the first time I saw it was pretty much what everyone got to see in the beta. So, like, but we just saw it earlier than everyone else. So those same three levels, Snowbound, High Ground, and Valhalla. So that came out in a beta, so we really literally just saw what everyone else got to see a few months later. So so that hasn't changed much, but we when we saw it last, and this is all coming up in our story, are the new weapons and getting to use some of those, and we saw additional maps that we're going to reveal in the magazine, which is cool. And just a funny quick story is, like, Bungie, like, we kind of have this grudge against Bungie now because we beat them so bad the first few times in Halo 2, and then they still have an overall losing record against us. So every time we show up there for a story, they all get organized and have a team ready to play us. And this last time, the first time we went to see Halo 3, they kicked our ass like 3-0 because those were the first time. That was the first time we played Halo 3, period, way before beta. We're learning the new controls, we're learning the maps, and they just destroyed us. So then, second cover story, they're all about to do it again, and I just said, no, we're not, this is not an official match. We'll do an exhibition match, we'll play for fun, but this does not count towards the official record. And then they started arguing with us. They're like, no, this is an official match. And we're like, no way, this is the first time we're seeing these maps, there's all these new weapons, we don't know where everything is, even though...
Yeah.
You know, we ran through them. We played each one for about 10, 15 minutes. But, like, these guys are playing hours a day. Like, they know exactly how it's laid out. Like, there's this one new map called Guardian that's kind of like the spiritual successor to Lockout. So it's very twisty and windy with a lot of catwalks and paths. And, And now we're like, we have no idea how to navigate, you know, this level yet. We're like... We might see, oh, there's the shotgun, but, like, if you just started to randomly spawn me somewhere, I don't know how to go get that shotgun, like, where it is exactly. So they have a huge advantage, and it was like, this is not going to be an official match. But it's cool to see the new weapons, the new multiplayer maps, and single player was a big thing that was different from our first visit, was because one of the things we complained about, not really complained, it wasn't bad, but, like, we were like, multiplayer looks good, but it doesn't look next-gen, like, Gears of War good.
Yeah.
But when we played single player, we're like, okay, this game does look really good. Still not quite that same Gears of War thing, mm-hmm. where it's really mind-blowing, next-gen, high-definition stuff. But it's a different art style. And for Halo's art style, man, the single player looks really good. Like, the lighting, the outdoors levels, the indoor lighting, it's a real looker of a game.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. Vicious 696 last week. He went to E3 and got to see behind the scenes demonstration on the game, and he said the exact same thing, that the lighting effects and everything going on in the background during single player was very exciting to see.
Yeah, and it's a subtle beauty. Like, I want to clarify, because when people first booted up, it's like, and I don't know if other people feel the same way, but the way I look at it, it's like the first time I saw Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, and the first time I saw Gears of War. Like, those are two games I use as still, I think those are the two best-looking games on next-gen platforms.
Yeah.
And maybe MotorStorm as well, but I'm like, these are the games where when you first look at it, immediately you're like, wow, this is next-gen. This is significantly better than what I've been playing on the PS2 or Xbox One. It's really good. They're really good-looking games. And Halo 3 is not quite that same, holy shit, this is the coolest looking thing in the world. But it's very solidly and subtly beautiful. Like, it's, you know, it's not in your face, but you know, the animations, the sounds, the ambient sounds, the chatter from the soldiers, the way, like, you're when you're in the jungle and the sunlight's kind of peeking through the leaves and on
wow.
the ground, it all comes together really well. And it's not that kind of realistic look, because everything in Halo, I mean, why one reason why Gears of War and Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter is kind of that immediate wow to me is because they have this kind of real world gritty
yeah.
look to them.
Yeah,
but Halo 3 is kind of, yeah. It's a different, totally different art style.
Mm-hmm.
Halo 3 is not that real world art style. It's just, it's more colorful, it's brighter, you know, the rocks and the sand and the grass, everything's just a little bit more vivid than what it would look, what real life, you know, you would see. So it's a different style, but it does definitely, I can now safely say that the game does look really good.
That's great.
Awesome.
Man. I mean, a lot of people, that was a big complaint, you know, with the beta, is people were saying, hey, this doesn't really meet up to stuff like Gears of War, and this is supposed to be the biggest game of the year, you know, what gives? But it's
yeah,
cool to hear
totally.
That the single player really, really meets that standard, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that Gears of War set, and rightly so, you know, because it's supposed to be the hottest game ever, pretty much so far. So it should really meet up on that, on the visual end as well. So, and it's cool to, you know, it's cool that, that to hear people judge it on its own art style as well, because
yeah.
Gears obviously
That's
has
the key
a very
thing, yeah.
different art style, and it's cool that because I know some people are really comparing it on that same level, and it's on the same level but just kind of a different shift on the art style. It's cool to hear that.
Well, there's two things. Like, yeah, it's not fair to compare for two reasons. Like, one, it's a different art style, you know, like you said, but it's also technically speaking, you can probably spend a lot more time making Gears of War look good because the game is pretty linear. You're
yeah.
walking down mostly rooms and paths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like Gears, or Halo where there's some really open levels where I could just drive around. I don't mean like open world, like GTA kind of style sandbox game, but it's a lot bigger in scope. So, you know, they can't, it's not the same kind of game where just you can make one hallway, you know, house look completely amazing in Gears of War because you don't have those kind of tight, enclosed, linear levels in Halo 3.
Hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one thing we've been saying for a while.
Hey, Kaivex also asked, have you got your hands on Sierra 117? And if so, how was it?
We didn't play it. We played the next two levels after that. Sierra 117 was the one they showed at E3, and what they showed at E3 was slightly different than what they showed us, so I got to see like more of Sierra 117 than what was shown at E3, but that was the jungle level I was describing, and I think that was the thing that the striking thing was, just watching seeing the sun coming through the tree leaves, which was really awesome to see. And let me think what else was about that level that was pretty exciting. The, you know, we it was next to a river, so we get to see some of the water effects that looked really good. You see the way the AI kind of works, because there's a lot of crates in the one part of the pier. Like, you can see the enemies kind of ducking behind the things and running around a corner, and doing all kinds of things. And it was a pretty exciting level. And, like, during the E3 demo, we saw when you walked around a corner that there was this brute chieftain, I think, who was holding up one of the human marines and threatening him before you guys, before your team shows up and you're with the Arbiter. So it's just like there's these more in-game kind of cinematic type moments. I don't mean a cut scene, but just like these things that are happening in the level as you play through them.
Nice.
Very cool.
Nice. Awesome.
Now, I understand there's a little more teamwork that the AI does, you know, against you. Did you experience some of that in some of your demo time with that?
I don't know. I mean, there's more coordination between the enemies. Like, you'll hear them talking to each other. Okay. Between the, like, the, there's a better sense of hierarchy between, okay, grunts are really the grunts, and the low-level guys, the brutes, are the ones kind of commanding each squad. So you get a better sense of that. I'm not sure if I personally witnessed anything, I would say, AI-wise, they did anything smart to kind of, like, you know, flush me out from behind cover or anything like that. It might, but it's all, like, I don't specifically remember anything like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Cool. We have one.
There was cool AI things, like, where, you know, they're, you know, the equipment, like the bubble shields and all that. There's new equipment in the game, obviously, that we didn't see in the beta, and you could, the enemies are using them as well. Like, so that was kind of cool to see. All of a sudden, you know, you're advancing on a squad and a bubble shield pops up, and one of the new equipments, which it makes this green kind of bubble, and then it's the regenerator, it heals them, and I'm like, first time I saw it, I'm like, what the hell is that? So, you know, that stuff's kind of cool to see. And your teammate AI is improved as well, like your squad is around, you know, in Halo 2, you're able to ride the Warthog and have the soldiers drive you around. You'll see more of that here, where you're on a mongoose and then you can ride in the back and then someone will drive you around. And then like if you're in the hog carrier where you have all your guys in the back, you know, they'll all hop in and then you can drive them around and then someone else will drive if you leave the car. And stuff like that. So there's a lot of cool things to see. And it's the chatter, like I said, was really good too now. Like, if you're driving and you flip the Jeep over, one of the soldiers will actually insult you in your driving abilities. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was some humor like that in Halo 2. It's good to see that it's back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man.
Yeah. There's one from Brent Gamer. He's our local comedian, per se. And he has a goofy one here. He goes, there comes a time in every podcast life when it finally spreads its wings, finally allows a magazine editor to guest host the show. With the addition of Dan Shu, we have now had the pleasure of having two EGM editors join us on the podcast, and the resulting media rendezvous is always entertaining. Wait, did I say that right?
Close enough.
Yep. Celebrate this joyous occasion, I have compiled a list of questions for Mr. Shu. Number one, how heavy is Kathleen Sanders' chihuahua, and how long were you able to hold it up in the air by the back of its shirt at E3?
Oh, that's funny. This thing weighs, it's probably just slightly heavier than two paperclips. It's this little big rat dog, and it's really cute because it's not like a yippy annoying dog. It's really well behaved. Yeah, and so like for a little, I'm not like a toy dog kind of person. Like, mm-hmm. I'm more like I like labs and golden retrievers, but this thing is just really cute and adorable. But the thing I hate is, so Kathleen Sanders is the producer on the One Up Show.
Yeah,
and she has a chihuahua, and she always puts her in like little dresses and shirts, and I'm like, oh, it's so disgusting. So every chance I get, I take it off. But you know, that sounds kind of perverted, but it's just because I'm like, I don't agree with dogs wearing dresses. You know, I just philosophically, I think it's a bad idea. So she'll yell at me about that, and then every time she sees the dog Minnie running around naked, she'll yell out, "Shoo, where are you?" And she'll come and hunt me down. So what Brent Gamer's referring to is on the One Up Show, on the back of her shirt is this hook for the leash. So I just picked it up with one finger and I was just dangling it. And then Kathleen's off camera and she's like yelling at me. She's like, "Shoo, knock it off!" And then scolding me for abusing her dog. But that was kind of a funny moment.
Awesome. All right. So number two, he goes, "What is harder to deal with? Fanboys making unfair comments on your one-up blog, or Sean Elliott getting drunk and doing his nerd impersonation?"
So Sean Elliott's the previews editor at Games for Windows Magazine, our sister publication.
Yeah.
He used to be an XC jammer as well. He's in his own world. This guy, he does, impersonations. And Crispin Boyer, our senior editor, actually roomed with him at E3, and we're all like, "How is it? How is it?" And he's just like, the guy doesn't really have an off button. Like, he'll just keep talking. It's like 4 a.m. in the morning. He's still talking and rapping and freestyling. And then and Crispin's just like, dude, E3's going to start. I got to get up at 9. Like, you got to go to sleep. And so that's what it's like hanging out with Sean.
Wow.
But he's a really funny and really, really super smart guy. One of the smartest guys I know here. So it's fun hanging out with him. Like, but he distracts me too. Like, I have him on AIM. I'm actually thinking about taking him off my AIM list because every like 20 minutes I get a link from some random weird crap that he found on the internet. You know, some YouTube link or break.com link, and I'm just like, I'm compelled to see what it is. So once I get a link, I got to click on it, and then 3 minutes later, I'm like, ah, man, I have so many distractions. I got work to do. So that's kind of funny. But I think I'd rather deal with that than the unfair comments. I like constructive criticism, and I like when people get into the magazine and want to help out. But I don't.
Yeah.
The ones that drive me crazy are just like the unreasonable, crazy rants that don't seem to make any sense.
Oh yeah, they just want to make a little name for themselves, I guess.
Yeah.
All right. So number three, he goes, are the one-up servers ever going to get an upgrade? Or will it still take me 3 hours to download an episode of EGM Live 3 years from now?
Well, I go to iTunes to get my EGM Live, but they are. I don't know if I can comment on that. But they do know that there are problems and that the technology needs to get better. So it is absolutely something our company is looking at and should be resolved soon. You know, it's something, it's high priority for us.
In other words,
it's not something like, we'll get to it someday. Like, we know there are problems.
Yeah. Cool. And number four, after playing Western RPGs and writing for a major gaming magazine, which is truly mightier, the pen or the sword?
I don't know. That's a very strange question.
Oh yeah, that's one gamer for you though.
I guess some people would say the pen. You know, it's like, because my sword is only hacking away at AI creatures, where what we write is, you know, reaching to like millions of people. So that's kind of cool. But I don't know. It's a weird question. I'm not even sure if I quite understand it, but
well,
funny question.
Number five is even weirder. And I'm going to say it in my Arnold Schwarzenegger voice. Who's your daddy and what does he do?
My daddy is Mr. David Hsu, and he's a restaurant manager at a casino in Vegas.
Nice.
Wow.
I answer that very literally.
Play it safe. All right, so he concludes his message by saying, thanks for coming on the podcast show, and I know that Fumo Jive and JVB and the rest of the Podtacular community really appreciate it.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, everybody.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, man, definitely. Okay, well, moving on to some Halo 3 stuff with Crimson Viper. He says, okay, here's my question. Dan, as a Halo fan yourself, how do you feel about Halo 3's features and balance?
Man, you guys, your fans are real big Halo players, huh?
Go figure.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
Like, no Soul Calibur or Splinter Cell or anything?
Nah,
no, that's cool, that's cool. I understand that. That is, like, the hot thing. Features-wise, Halo 3 features, I think, are just, like, it's mind-blowing. It's really incredible how much game there is to play. Like, when we went there for the day, by the end, it was almost hard to wrap around how much game there is. It's like, it's almost, in a weird way, it's almost kind of too much. And the reason I say this is because, like, campaign mode, I want to play. And then campaign mode co-op. Like, I want to play it by myself, but I also want to play it co-op with a friend, because that's a lot of fun. And then there's tons of multiplayer. And within multiplayer, I mean, their multiplayer feature set is more robust than any other multiplayer game, period. Even multiplayer-only games, you know.
Wow.
Like, compare Halo 3 to, or Halo 2 to Shadowrun. Halo 2 is way more customizable. There's so many options you could do. You could create your own modes. Even Halo 1, there are, you know, like, between Oddball and Capture the Flag, and then Halo 2, you get Assault and Territories and, you know, King of the Hill and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's there are a lot of ways to play Halo 2. And it's real funny because we have a group, there's like two schools of Halo fans here. There's the ones that just want to play Slayer and Team Slayer. And then there's me, who like whenever I host, I start tweaking everything and it drives them crazy. Because I'm like, all right, we're going to do 8-ball, rocket ball, we'll do oddball, rocket ball with 3 balls, like with 8 players, and then like people are just like, what are you doing? Just play Slayer. And I'm like, look at all these options. Why do you want to play it just straight up? So multiplayer itself, you know, not counting co-op, is amazingly robust. And then there's the metagame that was kind of leaked a little bit ago that we're going to talk about in our story, which is when you're playing the campaign mode, there's a game on top of the game that you can play. It's like trying to play Halo in an arcade style for points, and then you can play that co-op. And then there's hidden goals that you could find that alter the way you play the game. And I can't get into too many details. Like, this is all stuff for our story that's just hitting now. But there's these skulls that you could find that alter how the game plays and how you score in the meta game. And then there's some map editor thing, which is really one of the most significant things that, I guess it's hard to really explain why it's fun until you try it, but it's a way for you to edit the maps but play games in them at the same time. In our article, we explain like all these different ideas that kind of popped up for modes that you could do in this map editor. Like, one of them was like a Halo version of Jenga, and another version was like what they call a magic carpet ride, and then they did this bungee to impromptu real-time strategy way of playing Team Slayer within this map editor. Wow. And so there's all of that to play, and then you could make maps, and you could save your films and cut up the films and study them. And like, it's almost like, man, in a weird way, I'm like, this should be split up into 2 or 3 products, because it's like, how am I going to find time to play the GTAs and the Mass Effects this winter? You could spend 200 hours in Halo alone and still, like, you know, still have a lot of fun with it. So it's a lot of game in one disc.
That's awesome. That's awesome to hear.
Nice.
And finally, Painkiller. He says, tell Dan I love EGM and Game for Windows.
And I love Painkiller.
You hear that, Painkiller? awesome. Once again, I want to thank you for, you know, taking the time to chit-chat with us.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I hope I didn't talk too much. I've said it so many times that I really tend to talk a lot when I get going, but I just love talking about games, so thanks for having me
on. Absolutely, and it shows, man, it shows, and that's why you're well-respected in the community. I mean, you know, guys like Godfrey from Gaming Tag Radio had nothing but, you know, great things to say about you, so... You know, it definitely came out today, so, you know, very genuine.
Appreciate it.
Well, no problem. On.
Well, hey, send in your comics, guys, etc. to podtacular@gmail.com. We depend on your submissions to keep the show going. Keep an eye on podtacular.com for an invitation to send in stuff for next week's show.
You can call our listener voicemail at 206-888-HALO and leave a Halo-related voice message. We play these back regularly on the Customs and Call-In show.
Yeah, be sure to check us out at podtacular.com. Yeah. And while you're there, check out the forums. There's lots of buzz about Halo 3 and other stuff going on.
And thanks to the people that contribute to Podtacular, whether it's working in the community or the site, contributing to our PayPal to help with the hosting bill, and subscribing to the show and reviewing us in iTunes. We couldn't do it without you.
Check out the other shows on the GamerCast Network. We've got Gamertag Radio, Uncle Gamer Radio, and GamerCast Network's own video game show. And until next time, I'm Fumo Jive.
I'm JVB.
And I'm Dan Chu.
And tell us where we can find you again.
Our magazine, our main website, 1UP.com, our magazine-specific side of it is egm.1UP.com, and then my blog is egmshoe.1UP.com. You know, stop by, say hi, and check out the... I don't think people care about me, but, you know, you can stop by and check out that link about getting a job in the games industry.
Yeah, it's definitely a good read. I love the part where you said they actually set you down so you could play a level of I forgot which game it was.
And that they Alien also had Trilogy.
Another, you go. And they also had another guy come in, and he didn't even know how to hold a controller.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite. That was one that, when we were talking earlier about guys who have like newspaper backgrounds and like mm-hmm. they're writers and stuff, like, doesn't mean they know their stuff, because this guy came in, he worked for a newspaper, had a journalism degree. He tried playing Ridge Racer on a PS1 with both thumbs on the D-pad. So he asked us, like, well, how do I hit the gas button? He didn't have that third hand or third thumb to hit the gas button.
You're fired.
Nice. Get out of here now.
Forget about it.
Oh, man. That's a good way to end the show.
There's only one thing left to say.
And tell us where we can find you again.
I'm sorry?
Tell us where we can find you.
I'm messing your whole outro out.
That's cool. That's cool.
I was doing okay for most of the show until the very end. I fell asleep or something. So
remember, guys, if you're going for these interviews, make sure you bring out your gaming skills with you.
Just one thumb on the D-pad. GamerCastNetwork.com